Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
This episode of Oppo is brought to you in part by WealthBar. WealthBar makes it ridiculously easy to access professionally managed investments and financial advice. Invest in a professionally managed portfolio in minutes. You'll also get unlimited financial advice from a certified financial planner. When and how it works for you. Sign up at wealthbar.com/CanadaLand and get a $100 fee credit. Visit wealthbar.com/CanadaLand for more offer details.
This episode of Oppo is brought to you in part by FreshBooks. FreshBooks is easy-to-use accounting software designed specifically with you, the small business owner or freelancer, in mind. FreshBooks makes it easy to stay in the black without seeing red. It's genuinely easy to invoice, expense, and manage your books as a small business owner. For more information, go to freshbooks.com/oppo.
From Canada Land, this is Oppo. I'm Jen Gerson in Calgary, and where in the world is Sandy Garasino?
I'm at home in Vancouver. How are you, Jen?
I'm pretty good, but I gotta be honest, even home in Vancouver looks pretty good from Calgary right now.
Well, it does, because I remember I spent many a February in Calgary and environs over the years.
You've paid your dues, is what you're telling me.
I have. I've got the frostbitten toes to prove it.
All right. Now, many of our audience will become angry at us because once again, we are delving headfirst into conservative politics. Yes, guys, I know you're quite correct. We've done a lot of conservative stuff over the last few weeks, and I promise we will shake things up for next show. But right now, it is the season of the conservative, and we have to address what is going on with the conservative leadership race.
We have to, because despite the appearance of little happening, there's actually a lot happening, isn't there, Jen?
It's very interesting. So, to help us unravel it all, we have talked to a guy named Ken Bosenkool, who is a former Harper strategist and the partner of KTG Public Affairs. Now, Ken recently wrote a really interesting little op-ed in CBC Calgary, where he laid out what the Harper government's strategy was for winning majorities, and he explains why that strategy is now irrevocably broken, and what a future conservative leader is going to have to do to try and rebuild the coalition to win enough votes in the future. So first, I want to start out by talking a little bit about your op-ed, which appeared in CBC Calgary recently. I mean, I thought it was a really interesting op-ed because you showed readers how the electoral sausage gets made and what kinds of considerations a political party has to make strategically in order to try to win. So I'm wondering if you could just sort of explain for us what the Harper strategy for winning was.
Yeah, I mean, political parties exist for one reason, which is to form government. And if you have a political party that doesn't have that as its goal, it's not a a good political party. And so Harper's strategy really, I think, breaks down into two things. Number one, a collection of strengths across the country in different pockets. So, you know, rural BC, obviously Alberta, Saskatchewan, everywhere. And then in Atlantic Canada, some smattering of seats, and then some strength around Quebec City, some strength around Ottawa and southwestern Ontario, sort of rural Ontario. But in the last, or in every single election, and frankly, this is true of the Ontario Tories as well, the real key to victory is this horseshoe region around Toronto, which we, in political parlance, refer to by its area code, which is the 905 region around Toronto. And that has been sort of the bellwether region. Conservatives win when they win those suburban seats. I wouldn't call them urban or rural, they're suburban seats. And they tend to lose when they don't win those seats. And so a brilliant guy named Patrick Mutart, who did some work in the 2004 campaign for me, then became a permanent Harper staffer and strategist after that. And he said, let's learn some more about who are the voters in the 905. And so Patrick went about saying, who are the key voters that we have? And he developed some voter profiles for voters that we have, and there was two or three of those. Who are the voters who, when they vote for us, we win, and when they don't vote for us, we lose, swing voters, and he developed two or three profiles for that. And who are voters, and again, this is a political party, who are the voters who never vote for us, and we shouldn't really spend too much time being worried about them? And so we had three categories of voters. And so in the sort of core voter group, were guys like our friend Dougie. And Dougie was this beer-swilling construction worker who, if he voted, voted conservative. And so he was a core voter of ours. The problem with Dougie was, if he had a choice between drinking beer and voting, if he wasn't mad enough, he'd drink beer. And so, you know, we needed a strategy which was called getting the turnout higher for Dougie. And so, and we knew that Dougie would vote if he got mad about wasteful spending. So that was part of the strategy to talk about some of the waste in the sponsorship scandal and et cetera. And our advertising to his demographic and to the TV shows and other things back when people watched TV were all geared toward making Dougie mad.
It's decision time. Liberal or conservative? Let's break it all down. Is Justin ready? To pay for his promises, he'll run a $10 billion deficit, impose a $1,000 tax on the typical worker, cancel the monthly child care checks. And Harper's plan? Protect our economy with a balanced budget, a tax cut on your paycheck, a tax credit to renovate your home. Higher taxes with Justin, lower taxes with Harper. In an election this close, there's a lot at stake for you and your family.
Then we had in the swing voters, women with children, and usually women with two, three, or more children. I always like to joke that if you have three children, you're 50-50 likely to vote conservative, and that percentage goes up by 10% for every additional child you have. So by the time you get 10 kids, you're 110% likely to vote conservative. But Heather had a different set of concerns. She was, you know, at the end of the month, she was worried about balancing the family checkbook. She wanted to put her kids in hockey and in music lessons, or in ballet and in trombone. And, you know, those are the kind of decisions that were on the cusp for her. And so when Harper talked about the sports and arts tax credit, even though really it was a pretty minor thing, and people sort of say, oh, these targeted tax credits are crazy. But for Heather, that was a signal that Harper's people understood her plight at the end of every month. And it was a signal that they understood her. And then the $100 per kid, of course, under age of six, was also something that showed that the Harper government understood. And so we developed these voter profiles of different types of voters, and then we developed our targeting around those voters from what they wanted and what they needed. And critically, we knew that there were enough of these voters in those 905 ridings that if we could convince a greater turnout of Dougies and a greater switch votes to the Conservatives for the Heathers, we could have a better chance of winning. And so that's how we went about it.
So there's also two other elements to the strategy. One was, in order for this strategy to work, according to your own op-ed, the NDP had to have a very strong showing, which would effectively leech off Liberal voters.
Yeah, I mean, we played our game well, but in 2006, you recall, Jack Layton was a fairly popular national NDP leader who was coming into his own. And all the polls were showing that Jack Layton had sort of between the 17 and 25 to maybe even 30% support. And particularly in a couple of the regions, his support was tending to be very strong. That allowed us to win the 905 with around 40% of the vote.
I'm intrigued by the analysis of Dougie and Heather, especially in the 905, which is roughly 50% visible minority and a very, very high percentage of immigrant voters. And I would suggest that 2015 was a seminal election because the choice, the strategic choice by the Conservative Party to go after niqabs, to go after the barbaric cultural practices, to really target and create serious challenges for particularly Muslim voters, but also voters of color, making them feel vulnerable. Was that not a long-lasting strategic error?
I'm going to point to the math on this. I'm going to say I don't think you're entirely wrong. I think we sent some signals that were not very well received. But the math tells a slightly different story, because in 2011, we got 42.5% in the 905 across those ridings. And in 2015, we got 39.9. So it was a drop of 3%. Now, it's entirely possible that every single one of that 3% drop were from those new Canadian groups. But
Visible minority groups.
Visible minority groups are new. You know, we tend to call them new Canadians.
But they're not the same.
So the math just doesn't suggest there was a massive fall off in those votes. What I would say in addition is that, and people say, you know, Jason Kenney obviously did a great job for us in those elections, targeting or going into those communities and making them feel comfortable with us. What we found was that, you know, a Dougie from a visible minority didn't vote all that much different than a Dougie from a traditional Canadian family, and a Heather from a new Canadian family or a visible minority family didn't always vote that differently than a Heather from the general population. And so their concerns, because most in the 905, you know, you have, especially among second generation Canadians, they tended to have similar concerns, even if they were in communities that were, you know, and there's pockets of different communities around Toronto. But what we found when we pushed on these things is that the Heathers, of course, they had different names, but the Heathers in the visible minority communities didn't vote or think that much differently than the Heathers in the traditional Canadian communities.
You know, one of the things that I think was a strategic error about those particular decisions in 2015 was, you know, targeting niqab bans, targeting barbaric cultural practices did sort of bring in a wave of potential voters into the party, but they turned out to be really unreliable one-issue voters that would, however many, you know, dollars or names you managed to stuff the database in by appealing to those people, proved in the long run to be nothing, because they didn't turn out enough en masse to actually turn the tide, and they just weren't engaged enough in the mainstream political system to be worth the sacrifice of the party's reputation, especially with new Canadians and visible minorities. Is there a needle to be thread on Bill 21, or just a choice to be made? I mean, I've heard some arguments here that the Conservatives should really just double down on the West in the 905 and be willing to lose the handful of seats in Quebec in order to try and fortify its position in the 905, in which case the answer might just be for the Conservative Party to take a principled stand and oppose Bill 21.
Sitting in Lethbridge and you're, I think, sitting in Calgary, that sounds like a very good idea. But I think any party that aims to govern Canada, which is why I think bilingualism is so important in a leader, even though we have so many people in Canada that aren't bilingual, I think if you were to take an aggressive position on Bill 21, it would feel and maybe portray to a lot of people that you were deliberately writing off a part of the country. And I'm not sure that that would be a smart strategy from a regional perspective. And you know, again, I personally have a lot of problems. I'm in favor of religious liberty and all these things. And I think that these kinds of choices and these kinds of policies for a conservative who believes in religious liberty are problematic on a principled basis. But in terms of the regional politics of Canada, I would be very careful to run a strategy that could be portrayed as writing off one part of the country to win the rest. I think that did unbelievably bad damage to the Liberal Party in Western Canada for generations, and I would hate for the Conservative Party to go too far down that road.
So can I just ask you, what do you think are the major winning issues? What's going to make that dial move substantially in Ontario? Again, I point to a hard-fought election where your party drew a lot of blood from the Liberals, from Justin Trudeau, but it didn't dent Ontario really at all. So what's going to make the difference going forward?
So So I think this will take some hard work and some intuition and some smart political people to spend some time doing. But as usual, I'm not going to let that stop me from pontificating. I mean, the answers are difficult and will take a lot of hard work. But I think there's a couple things that I would look to or that I would be testing very early. And number one is climate change. And look, what matters in politics is not what parties say, it's what people hear. And, you know, the Conservative Party put together a 75 or 80 page climate change policy, and they thought that that was enough. But frankly, what people heard was that they were against a major component of climate change from their opposing party. And climate change has become, I think, an issue of such importance to people that it cannot be ignored. And particularly, I think it's become an issue for that extra 10% of voters. I think getting from 40 to 50% in the 905, our accessible voter base, that 10% that we need cares an awful lot about climate change. You know, 10 years ago, Harper proved that if you have a battle between being green or dealing with climate change versus don't raise my taxes wins. I'm not sure the calculation is the same today. I'm not sure that a tax fight beats climate change, especially if your tax fight is centered around the other guy's climate change plan is a bunch of bunk, and I'm not putting anything realistic in the window to compete with it. So that's number one. Number two, I think the group of voters, I talked earlier about women with three or more children. I think aspirational mothers are going to be a very important demographic for the Conservative Party to focus on, and I call that women who have 0, 1 to 2 children, so women who would like to become a mother. And I think the issue of childcare is going to be a growing important issue for that demographic. And I think the Conservatives need to think carefully about paternity, maternity leave, and childcare. I wrote something about this with Jennifer Robson last year, and I think Conservatives need to take those kinds of issues seriously. Issues that, you know, we can't win by saying we're going to balance the budget and cut taxes. That's the sort of the Wall Street Journal traditional conservative approach. We need to have conservative solutions to non-traditional conservative issues like childcare and climate change. And we need to take those things extremely seriously.
This episode of OPPO is brought to you by one of my very favorite sponsors, FreshBooks, the fantastically easy to use accounting software. You started a small business because you love what you do. So why don't you have time to actually do it? FreshBooks help you focus on your craft by saving you time invoicing, expensing, and tracking your work. FreshBooks is so easy to use with built-in automation to ensure you spend as little time as possible invoicing, expensing, and tracking time. You can get back to what actually matters to you, growing a business. FreshBooks has plans designed for all types of small businesses, even layabouts like me. So whether you're a freelance photographer, a carpenter, or a podcaster, and let's be honest, you'll all be podcasters soon, choose a plan that's right for you. FreshBooks has everything you need to manage your books, invoices, expenses, time tracking, etc. FreshBooks is a simple and intuitive tool for small business owners. But if you ever need a bit of help wrapping your head around something, they even have an award-winning Toronto-based support team who are always happy to help. For more information, go to freshbooks.com/oppo.
This episode of OPPO is brought to you in part by WealthBar.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Barr believes your investment experience shouldn't be determined by how much you have. So whether you've got $1,000 or $1 million, you get access to professionally managed investments and financial advice. Open a TFSA, RRSP, and more online in minutes. No paperwork, no hold music. Check in on your investments anytime from your computer or their easy-to-use mobile app. Start investing with as little as $1,000. Consolidate your investments into one easy-to-manage view and get the full picture of how your wealth is growing. WealthBar makes it easy to make more confident decisions about your money. Speak to a financial advisor by phone, chat, email, or book a meeting. Services included in your fees, regardless of how much you have to invest. Start investing right away from the comfort of your PJs. Talk to a financial professional by chat, email, or phone, or book an appointment through the app, all at your convenience. Sign up in minutes at wealthbar.com/CanadaLand and get a $100 fee credit. Visit wealthbar.com/CanadaLand for more offer details.
It's really interesting to compare and contrast Aaron O'Toole and Peter MacKay here, who are the frontrunners. Obviously, there are other people in the race. Other declared include Marilyn Gladue, Richard Decaré, Jim Karahelios, Clayton Knutson, Leslyn Lewis, Rick Peterson, Aaron Seal, Derek Sloan, Bobby Singh, etc., etc. We shouldn't totally ignore Marilyn Gladue, who, of course, is a contender in this race and also the only woman in this race. Personally, I think it's not a great sign for the Conservative Party that they could only attract one woman to run. However, I mean, at this point, we're still looking at a very two-horse race, and that is O'Toole versus MacKay. It's fascinating just for me to see how these two men have positioned themselves so far. O'Toole is running to be a very sort of meat and potatoes kind of conservative who's trying to appeal to cultural conservatives at the base. You kind of get that appeal to the gut level stuff that the base is going for. Peter MacKay is running a very different campaign, and so far it's a campaign of absolute utter platitudes, a total lack of any kind of concrete messaging, terrible, terrible social media game. You know, he's running as if he is this anointed leader who is not even trying to appeal to the base of the Conservative Party.
It's as if he's the Trudeau non-Trudeau.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the Conservative Trudeau light.
Exactly. And I'm going to point out one very interesting tweet because it was what flagged to my attention. And I think it's actually a very telling tweet where you have Peter MacKay sort of doing like a yoga pose, wearing an I Love Alberta Oil t-shirt next to This Hour Has 22 Minutes' Mark Critch. And Mark Critch has tweeted out, last week's Trudeau yoga tweet and interview shutdown had folks talking, so I showed up and made Peter MacKay do yoga with me tomorrow night on a new 22 Minutes. So in case you haven't been following this particular drama, in the ongoing tailspin that Peter MacKay's campaign has been, Peter MacKay does this interview with CTV, and, you know, he goes and does a tour of something or another, and then the reporter sits down with him, and Peter MacKay starts talking about the tone of the race and how he wants to have a more elevated, you know, civil tone, and the reporter, to her credit, goes to him and says, yeah, well, you just tweeted this nasty thing about, you know, Justin Trudeau doing yoga. You know, is that the tone you're looking for? And Peter MacKay kind of, you know, falters. And he's like, well, no, that was beneath me. And I apologize. Like, that wasn't right. And at that point, one of Peter MacKay's staff members basically comes in to try and shut the interview down. And Peter MacKay, you know, to his credit, shuts down his own staffer and is like, no, she's just doing her job. She's just a reporter asking questions. And trust me, as a journalist, it's really nice to see a conservative leader or a conservative potential leader kind of stand up for a journalist who's doing her job and to respect the fact that they're doing their job. You know, we have seen this Conservative Party and certainly the Republicans and conservatives in the U.S. take a very, very nasty tone toward journalism generally.
Totally failed the never defend, just attack.
Yeah, he did. So, I mean, as a journalist, I really respected that. But at the same time, I have to admit, from a political point of view, should he be trashing his staff on air? Like his social media has been an absolute tire fire.
But let's get to the essence of Peter MacKay. I mean, what I'm seeing in Peter MacKay is the guns and yoga candidate. You know, this is the guy who was wearing the gun t-shirt, the assault rifle t-shirt. Now he's the I love Alberta oil.
Yeah.
And I love yoga.
Yeah.
Is there anything that Peter MacKay doesn't love?
Yeah.
Except Justin Trudeau, who he'd probably just really like to be. You know, it's where is this campaign going and how are Canadians going to respond to this? And I think we're really seeing that, you know, there's no there yet.
Yeah, you can't pander to everybody. That's the problem. Like, there has to be a point at which you put forth a set of values and positions that people can actually vote on. You can't just, like, try and appeal to absolutely everybody. And I think it comes across as disingenuous. And this is why this tweet twigged for me. But, you know, Mark Critch put out this tweet, and it read, last week's Trudeau yoga tweet and interview shutdown had folks talking, so I showed up and made Peter MacKay do yoga with me tomorrow night on a new 22 minutes. And, you know, in it is this picture of Peter MacKay wearing a I Love Alberta Oil t-shirt and doing a yoga pose with Mark Critch. And this is just fascinating to me because how it reads to me, honestly, is Peter MacKay apologizing for putting out a tweet making fun of Trudeau and asking for forgiveness from the 905 Laurentian consensus set by going on.
He's really sorry.
Yeah, he's really sorry. By going on This Hour Has 22 Minutes with Mark Critch. Now, if there is like a show or a personality who's more widely held in contempt by the conservative base, it's probably this hour has 22 minutes.
Well, like, I do not think that, in a way, what McKay is doing is he's trying to signal, he's trying to fight the general election in the conservative nomination race. And this points out...
That's exactly what he's doing.
This points out the difficulty, which is that, of course, in the modern era, in modern times, everybody is actually going to get tarred with what they put out in the nomination race. It used to be that we weren't before social media, we weren't really paying attention that much to what was happening. It was kind of inside baseball, inside the party, and then you pivot to the general later on, and everybody sort of forgets all the more fringy things and the playing to the base that you did during the nomination race to get the nomination. We're seeing this in the Democratic Party right now. But everybody's going to get nailed with that. So I think he's probably assuming or hoping that it's okay to assume that he's going to be the leader, and he's not going to do something that's playing to the base like Erin O'Toole is doing. Because you look at what Erin O'Toole is doing, and I do not see anyone who is playing beyond the four corners of who the conservative membership is today. This is not someone who is trying to expand the tent. This is not someone, Erin O'Toole is not trying to reach across the aisle. He is not trying to play to the 905. He is trying to play to veterans and to the base and to traditional Christian cultural values, social conservatives. That's what I see.
Without getting into detail about the social conservative side, because I think that that's a side conversation, Erin O'Toole is running to win the leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada. Peter McKay is running to win the 905. The problem is that if Peter McKay can't actually put forward a set of values or positions that appeals to the Conservative Party base, he's going to create a vulnerability for himself. I mean, polling shows him far and away ahead the leader. But a lot of that polling is based on national polling, which is irrelevant for a leadership campaign, and a ton of it is simply based on name recognition. And both O'Toole and McKay have a couple of weeks to sort of build their name recognition and build their case. I actually think that O'Toole is positioning himself very intelligently to win the race. And then, you know, after he wins the leadership race, then he can start micro-targeting the 905 with specific sort of values and propositions that he thinks can expand the tent. His job right now is not to expand the tent. His job right now is to win the votes that are on the table.
But by then, he will have established a brand that is very hard to escape from. And this may be where McKay is a little bit better. I mean, it looks better for O'Toole with the base right now. But let's go back to what Ken Bosanquil has to say, which is that there is no way for the Conservative Party to win a majority government. And if they don't win a majority, it's going to be very hard for them to ever govern at all, unless they expand that tent, unless they do appeal to the 905.
I think
that this is actually a really existential problem. I don't think anybody in the Conservative Party I haven't seen it articulated, I haven't seen it said anywhere, how very bad the trouble they are in. The Conservative Party is in deep, deep, deep trouble because its strength entirely is in one small region where it has virtually 100% of the seats. But it's in a minority position everywhere else in the country, and its brand has been almost rejected everywhere else in the country.
But its brand has been rejected everywhere else in the country as that brand has become increasingly dilute, which is an interesting conversation.
I don't know that it has.
Like, Scheer, what the hell did Scheer stand for? What the hell did the Conservative Party stand for in the last election? They had ample opportunity to be like the anti-corruption party on SNC. They completely failed to take it up. They had every opportunity to come up with a credible conservative climate change plan with a lot of sort of market-based tools for trying to reduce carbon emissions. They completely rejected that and were like the anti-carbon tax party. They had every opportunity to take a strong stand on Bill 21, and absolutely they should have taken a strong stand on Bill 21, even at the expense of the votes in Quebec that didn't come to it anyway. They completely failed to do that. And so what happened was the Conservative Party got labeled as the party that was uncomfortable with abortion and gay rights because Scheer was kind of, you know, shaky on those answers. Well, in the absence of actually putting forward a set of policy positions about what you stand for, you will be labeled. Like, other people will put their positions on you and you will be labeled as that.
But this is where I see the peril of McKay. What the hell does McKay stand for? I have no idea.
Okay, well, let's rewind that clock a little bit more, because it's not just Andrew Scheer in 2019.
Mm-mm.
We've just gone over the catastrophic mistake of attacking religious minorities in mm-hmm. 2015. And we know that, and we've been watching Jason Kenney attacking environmentalists right today. He's got a war room. He's got an inquisition going on in
Alberta. Oh, man, don't. If we're going to start unpacking Jason Kenney, I'm going to, like, take forever here.
This is the party of attacking minorities and environmentalists. And we just listened to Ken Bosenkul say the party cannot get to into positive territory unless it adopts a climate change strategy. And we can see the failure and the disaster of the minority bashing. So I think that this is why I say this is not on Andrew Scheer. This is the path that the Conservative Party has been on for a decade.
I think that there's some truth to that. And you're right, I don't think that the failure of the party was solely Andrew Scheer. I would be a little bit hesitant to sort of pin the National Party with the particularly ridiculous nonsense happening in Alberta right now. Jason Kenney is not a representative of the Conservative Party of Canada anymore. He's playing the role of Premier of Alberta, and he's playing to a specific base within Alberta. And if you want to talk about how silly I think his war room is and his Inquisition are, believe me, I can have that conversation at depth, but we're not having that conversation.
The CRA audit started in 2012. Yep, this has been going on.
Oh, no, no, I'm not disputing this. I'm not disputing this.
This has been going on for almost a decade. The hostility is out there, and it's been trumpeted in the pages of the National Post and all of its newspapers across the country for almost a decade. That is the brand of the Conservative Party.
I think that that's correct. I think that there's a whole other side conversation we could have about a lot of that stuff, and it's really interesting. But generally, yes, I think that that's correct. And this is why I think that the Conservative Party has an opportunity here to pivot. Like, there's no reason, as I said this before at the outset, there is no reason why the Conservatives should have ceded ground on the environment. There's nothing anti-conservative about being for a clean environment, for conservation, for market-based solutions to climate change, like for being forward-thinking on these issues from a conservative value set. Like, there's no reason why the Conservative Party should be doing that, and they've
But the reason is so obvious. Their base is Alberta. Alberta is an oil and gas economy that has driven huge revenues, by the way, not just for Alberta, but for the country generally.
Alberta's also just 34 seats.
But they're afraid that if they let the climate change issue take control, this will have impact on the oil sands and on oil sands development and pipelines.
Then that shows a lack of imagination on their front, because like there isn't any reason. Like, Alberta is also supportive of conservation efforts. Like, Alberta is also supportive of generally regulations to deal with tailings ponds and those sorts of issues. Like, there isn't any reason why you can't come up with a conservative climate change policy that Alberta could get behind. Like, it's just, it isn't that complicated. Even a Kenny has kept the 100 megaton cap on the oil sands, you know, to limit its long-term growth. You know, you want to talk about oil sands. Let's talk about small nuclear reactors up in the oil sands to try and reduce carbon emissions in oil sands mining. Like, there's about a million and one things the Conservatives could do to try and help impact climate change issues in Alberta that doesn't entail shutting down the oil sands. So, like, I just think it's just more simple than that. I think that they haven't put a lot of thought into it, and instead they just decided, hey, we can rile up our base by getting them opposed to a carbon tax, by treating it as a new revenue measure, because we know our base hates new revenue measures, and that's where we're going to go. And I just think it's a short-sighted, narrow strategy, because what it has effectively done is it's ceded this really important strategic ground to the left. That's all it's done, mm-hmm. for no reason. Mm-hmm.
And not just the left, but the center, too, because I think that climate change as an issue is broadly and widely accepted by the mainstream of Canadian public opinion, and it's only going to continue. But I think that this is the hole that the Conservative Party has dug for itself as a brand and as an identity, and I think this is going to be, going forward, a deep, deep issue that every one of the leadership candidates is going to have to contend with, but probably not during the leadership race, because we're seeing the tone set right now, which is the fight for the base.
Well, that's it for Oppo this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Get in touch at oppo@canadalandshow.com or find us on Twitter at OppoCast.
This episode was produced by David Crosby. Our managing editor is Kevin Sexton. Theme music by Nathan Burley.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts, and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.